Hi, folks. Welcome to the Moving On Podcast. I'm Jay Norman, and this is my wife.
Hi, I'm Jessie Norman. Just like many of you, Jay and I have both walked through some difficult seasons in our lives.
And we know just how easy it is to get stuck.
We now have five beautiful
and crazy
children, and because of everything we've been through, our home operates on grace.
A concept we didn't fully understand until way later on in life.
Until we actually needed it ourselves. We want to share through stories of love and laughter
how we were moving on and how big of a game changer grace can be.
In relationship with one another and how we treat ourselves and, in our case, blending a family.
Something that may just require the largest amount of grace to date.
Preach.
You never know what road life's going to take you on. We have a podcast.
Yes, we do. And we really hope y'all enjoy it.
Hi, babe.
Hey.
How are you today?
I'm doing so good. How about you?
I'm doing good. It's a Sunday afternoon and I'm not working. Inside in the air conditioner.
I like recording on Sundays because we're about to go have some fun, and it puts me in a good mood that we're going to be doing that, so it makes me happier to record. It
puts me in a good mood to know I'm not in a hurry to be somewhere else.
Oh, I thought you were going to say puts you in a hurry to have the fun.
Oh, that too.
It does?
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited.
Yeah. It's been a crazy week.
Mm-hmm.
Started harvest this week, kind of been
what
in
kind
and
of harvest?
Corn harvest. And it's been just a little bit green, so we've been bouncing from field to field and trying it and thinking we're fixing to be in a hurry, and then we're not. And so it's been kind of a long week, and then had a few problems this week.
Yeah, and we're pretty spread out, too, so
that
doesn't help. It's kind of like playing a big old game of hide and seek across about, how many miles, 60 miles?
Yeah, 75 probably. Yeah.
75 miles of playing hide and go seek of which fields are ready to cut first.
Yeah, we stayed pretty close to home, but still you always look way off and think, I wonder if that'll work.
Right.
But you don't really want to go that far to try it. And so we are scattered out and and got people, you know, shuffled everywhere and trying to put all the pieces in. And this week we had an unusual amount of problems at the the start of harvest. You work all this time, and the guys have worked really hard, really all the way back to probably even December.
Yep.
Some of the stuff we're using now to get it ready. And we had one day there, we had three trucks go down in an hour and 15 minute, really major repairs. And I mean, and it's a time when we really needed three more trucks than we had when we started that process.
Right. It's pretty humbling because it probably makes you look like a new farmer, like you don't know to be getting ready because harvest is coming. And but it's just like, what are you going to do? It's out of your control, you know.
Well, too much time, too much moving parts, and things just added up. But our stars did not align in a good way.
I know.
And I think it was on a Wednesday, but it felt really like a Monday.
It
we ended up towing, I guess, two trucks in and left one on the side of the road to be fixed.
Yeah.
And hopefully have got one back going, hopefully another one tomorrow, and the other one, needless to say, we're picking up a lease truck in Dallas on Monday morning because it's going to be down for a while.
We did that last corn harvest.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to drive it. It was like a race to the trucks. You know, last one's a rotten egg.
Yeah.
So I think one of our new guys on the crew kept getting it. I felt so bad for him. I kept bringing him extra sandwiches.
Yeah, you just don't want to be the last man of the field.
No, you don't. They're all...
Nothing sacred during harvest. You just get there and grab what you can.
Yep. You don't have to be the first one, but you just can't be the last one.
Yeah, and so it's been a week of just a lot of little stuff and trying to get going. And once you get on track, usually, you know, things kind of line out.
Yeah.
But we're just here at a starting point, but we're not really starting. We finally got running pretty good on Saturday, and hopefully this week will be a good run all along. But my granddaddy told me when I was a little boy, we worked on a lot of stuff. And he just said, if you don't want to work on it, don't own it. And that's a true story.
Right. Well, I knew on Wednesday when stuff started going south, I was like, you know, we're going to get it all ironed out about Saturday night, you know, just in time for, because we shut down on Sundays and a lot of farmers in the areas don't. And Sundays can be tough for Jay because he's not rolling, knowing that others are, and so it makes you a little antsy, I know.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, it does
certain
things, but I'm used to it.
Used to it now.
Grew up that way, but definitely days when you're way behind and things have gone wrong, you're thinking, boy, I could get a lot done today.
Yeah, right? Sure. It's usually like beautiful weather.
Right.
It's like a perfect scenario to be rolling today, but I'm really thankful that you're not. When you were talking about trucks, I was talking to one of the other farm wives, and she was saying, you know, how often you guys are on your phones looking for a truck. It's almost like a never-ending look for a perfect truck, you know. And so I thought he had hopped on a plane Friday to go grab one in Houston, and I was up here in the studio. It's where I usually start my morning. And I heard the door. It kind of scared me because no one was supposed to be here. He's supposed to be on a plane. And up he comes up the stairs with me some coffee and breakfast. It was so nice. It was such a nice surprise.
Ultimately, I went to bed that night and decided that wasn't really what I wanted or wanted to do. Just, you know, too knee-jerk of a reaction. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. And it'll all work out, but decided I didn't want to go.
See, and to me, and this is what you've helped me to realize, but to me, a truck is a truck. The only difference in that truck and this truck is maybe like that one's red and this one is blue. And you are always on the hunt for this truck that can't be found. And if we can find it, it's like in Maine. And so you've really opened my eyes that there really is this certain type that you need and that's best for our crew, you know. But my girlfriend was saying that her fella was, I think he was planting. I think he was on a drill. And he got on his iPad looking at trucks. And I think he made two big passes without setting the drill. So she told him he's not allowed to.
It happens. Yeah, our trucks are just getting, you know, kind of some wear and tear. And one of my favorite sayings is I went to the well one too many times, you know, with them. Yeah. I've just kept them a little bit too long.
And yeah. So I really do wish we just had someone that we could text and this magical truck appears. But they seem to be so elusive.
Well, it's just a fine line.
Elusive?
In a way, but I think it's just a fine line for what you want versus, you know, what we can spend. I mean, obviously it's out there.
What you
want
to spend.
I know what I want, but I'm not going to pay that for it.
Right.
So that's the hard part.
Right. And what we have paid for this truck and what it did for our family.
Right. Or didn't do in some cases.
Yes. The latter.
That's right. A lot of the latter this week for sure.
Yeah. But
so that brings us to what we were talking about earlier. That's a lot of decisions that we talk about, just making decisions, you know, about stuff for the farm and about those vehicles. And we've just talked a lot about here lately about decisions that we've made throughout our life or this week or whatever that's affected us and how it can affect us later on.
Yeah, usually when we're trying to come up with content for our next episode, something will start kind of being... Our thoughts will kind of start be reoccurring thoughts on a centered theme. And so the past couple of weeks, just the word in my head is decisions.
Yeah.
And our pastor, I think he spoke in the beginning of June on decisions and how a lot of times we just kind of go along and we're big kids and, you know, we're adults. We can make our own decisions and we make them and how that really can lead us down the wrong path.
Right.
And how that's not really how we're designed. We're not really designed to walk this earth alone, out of communion with the Lord, out of communion with our spouse, out of communion with others. And so just talking more about, you know, hey, if you look up and you're just not where you want to be and you realize you've made some pretty poor decisions along the way, let's sit in a different seat. Let's take a different approach.
No.
And how about getting help with future decisions?
Well, and, you know, for me, you know, something that I wasn't really used to in my life, sharing a decision with anybody, you know, just rolling along and doing it. And now that's transitioned into friendships that, you know, I can sit down and talk to somebody and tell them, you know, something that's going on and be open enough and open-minded enough to, you know, to talk to them and to listen to what they had to say. And it's definitely, you know, in my past, it's not something that I had not necessarily access to. It was just something I did not do.
Right, right. That's more of something, you know, we're raised as women to kind of have our little groups and gossip and get together and chit-chat. And I think that's something you're learning later on in life, the benefits of having that community with your guys.
Well, it's just such a broader bigger world.
Right.
You know, that
y'all are so different.
Right. That I have personally and that we have personally, you know, that we have together. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, but for me personally, it's just a broader, bigger world to have those guys to talk to or, you know, tell a funny story to or whatever and know that, you know, whatever they say, whether they find it funny or not, you know, they may rib you a little bit, but it's not something you're going to get.
Well, you know, if we're talking to a group of farmers about what's going on with us, a lot of the moving parts, it's not surprising, it's not interesting. But when we talk to our friends that are in our small circle, their eyes are so big and they're just wowed by what you're saying because that's not any part of their life whatsoever. No. Our lives are so different. And so it's so fun to learn about them and then to share us with them, you know. It's all just really interesting, the balance of all of it.
Well, and even, you know, the questions that they ask.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm like, well, you know, I never really thought about that. Well, I never even thought to, you know, question that part of it. I've just been around it all, you know, for my whole life.
And I'm sure you feel that with me, too, because even though I've lived in the country my whole life, I've not been in farming except for you.
Right.
And so there are a lot of things where I'll ask you, and I bet you just want to be like, you idiot, you know, because it's obvious. The answer is very obvious, and it's obvious when you tell me.
Right.
But it's just, we're, you know, and especially because you've been in it since you were 9. So 40 years of doing this, to have to teach the smaller things to us, I'm sure can feel redundant, but.
Well, that's part of it. And I mean, it makes me realize that I don't need to, you know, take that for granted.
Yeah.
And think that people completely understand. And,
right.
You know, we follow a guy on Instagram, and he's doing a really, you know, a really good job of getting out and talking to people and getting the ag message across. And just what you're saying right there, from my standpoint, I mean, you know, if you get that train of thought, that's why there's a lot of negative talk about ag is because we are kind of stuck in our own world. And, and we don't step out and say anything or explain it. You know, we just kind of sit back and figure it'll straighten itself out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
That's really humbling for you to say. And we're talking about Jay Hill. He's out of Del City.
Yeah, Del City, Texas.
Anyways, he has just kind of revolutionized getting the word out about us farmers. Right. And I'm really proud to follow his lead. Because I trust in the things that he's trying to convey to others. And he left a really neat post, I guess a couple of nights ago. And just it had goosebumps reading it. And it was just, we should have read it on here.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful. I'm always proud to tell people what we do. And I'm always proud when people ask what I do, I'm proud to say. You know, maybe that is because we do live in a really neat part of Texas where we are honored and respected and welcomed. And so it makes me really sad for our friends that maybe get pushback or negative responses from people. And so to follow him into this new world where we're not going to allow them to be negative to us because we're going to make sure they know who we are.
Right.
It's just really kind of... exciting and feels very powerful, and it is something that I really can get behind because it's the right thing.
Right. Well, and it's something that I'm definitely passionate about, but really have honestly always been passionate about it in a very private way.
Right.
Other than just around other farmers and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, to see somebody get out and do what he's doing and what some other guys are doing and getting out in front of people and talking about it. I mean, it makes me want to do it. Probably not ever on that level.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it does make me feel better about being able to talk to somebody about it.
He did make you do your first ever Instagram. I know you're dying right now.
Thank you.
But you did. I was so proud. I haven't said anything
to
you.
Yeah, and when you did that, I thought with the way you showed me to do it, it was going straight to him, not to the whole front page, but thank you.
I have to be honest to you.
Yes.
And tell you, I don't know what I don't even know how to do it yet. So I didn't know if it was going straight to him or to everybody, but I'm going to learn. Yeah. I'm getting a lot better at it. It's just tricky. We're older. Yeah. We're older, you guys. And, but anyways, Jay did his first ever Instagram story to Jay Hill about something we were all joking about. And after he did it, I was like, you've got to be kidding me, because my Jay Norman is private and doesn't do Instagram. And so just how different you are and how trusting you are of me and yeah. us. And so I didn't say anything to you. I didn't say anything to Jay Hill. I wanted to be like, you just got him to do his first ever story. It's just so funny.
Yeah.
So, and then you got on the next day and put some posts up about the farm. And, you know, all throughout history, we take away people's humanity to be able to condemn them. You know, maybe we call them by a different label so that we can hate them. We take away that they are our fellow human beings because we've named them something different. And I think if you take away who we are as farmers, it's easy for the world to be so hateful yeah. to us. And something neat that Jay said the other day is, you know, this year we have a minimal amount of farmers left, and next year it'll be even less. Yeah. And that is what gave me goosebumps, because if you guys do not pass this down, you know, especially in our family, to our children. If our children don't kind of get on a expedited schedule learning this, because we haven't been able to drench them in it as you were drenched, you know, you almost had to pick between school and farming. And so if you guys do not pass this down, we are in trouble, all of us.
Yeah.
And to not know the importance of that, but instead brew hate towards farming is just crazy.
Well, I think it goes back to people like Jay Hill getting the right message out and taking the time to do it. I mean, even a year ago, before I started even messing with Instagram and, you know, knowing about people like him doing that, I mean, I would have never thought about taking the time to do the stuff that he does. And I don't know, even now, probably would never go to what the time that he does, but for him doing that part, it makes me want to do my small part, whether it's through Instagram or whatever, and just to talk to the people that I do know in my little world and at least get the right message out.
We have a great group of friends that we can start that with, and even if our small part is leading everyone we know to the people that are getting the word out, because even I'm stumbling through my words and not having a great way to express it.
Right.
But if I can lead all of you to the people that we really do respect in this realm, like Jay Hill and Millennial Farmer and
Rob Sharkey.
Oh my gosh, he's doing an amazing job. Yeah. And this farm wife, there's several. We're missing some right now, even saying this. My girlfriend, Farm Wife Guru, she's a wonderful advocate for getting the message of farming to people that aren't in this realm. And I thought maybe that's a neat path to take. And it's like we've gotten further down this path, and I've just seen the importance of it now more and more.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a big, big part of our society and awfully, honestly, a big part of the world. And, you know, the farmers are there and doing what they need to do, and we just need to know we have the support of the people, and that's what they're trying to paint the picture for them to understand. And
right.
So, and off the farming subject and talking about being condemned for your thoughts or being condemned for how you are, you had an experience this week at the doctor dealing with something that we've talked about on here before, and I think you felt really condemned about that after talking to him, and then maybe you have a little different, you know, perspective on it after a little bit of time.
Yeah, with anything else in life, when you walk through junk, you know, it just, I guess right before our vacation, my lungs locked down, and I didn't really know what it was, but for about 10 days, I just wasn't being able to get a full breath. So about by day 10, it's almost like someone's kind of strangling you, or they have like a lasso around your chest. And so by that last day, I didn't know what to do. I could not figure it out. And so with me, and I think I mentioned on here that I didn't know whether I needed to start with therapy, with that route, or, you know, yoga, or if it was physical, if it really was my lungs. And so, because I've heard, you know, and I've seen on questionnaires shortness of breath and never really thought anything of it. I was raised having something they called athletic-induced asthma, but I always just really thought that was, I didn't even really believe it myself. I just thought maybe I was out of shape. And I had an inhaler that would last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years because you don't use it but once a month. And I never used that inhaler during exercise and thought, I'm so glad I have that inhaler. Yeah. Like, it never made me feel any different.
Kind of like the jellyfish spray at South Park.
Yes. And so the spray.
Yeah.
And so anyways, I guess what I want to say is I was just confused. I didn't know. I didn't know whether to go to the doctor. I didn't know if maybe I could even go get allergy medicine. I was just kind of lost looking for direction.
But you made a decision looking for help.
Yes, because I always tell you guys, don't be afraid to ask for help. And so I didn't want to be a hypocrite. And I thought, I've waited too long. I need to just ask for help. So I went down to a doctor in Dallas that a friend had recommended me to, and she actually happened to be there that morning, which was just so weird. And I went in and sat down, and I think it was kind of, I was at the end of my rope. I just couldn't get a full breath. And when you can't get a full breath for 10 days, it really starts to wear on you. So the nurse comes in and she just kind of asks me what's going on, you know, of course. And I don't tell her everything I just told you guys, but I just kind of told her a gist of it and didn't know where to start. Didn't know if I was even in the right place, if this is a physical thing or if this is an emotional thing. But for some reason, I cannot get a full breath. But anyway, so I told the nurse, and she was just pretty condescending about how the word anxiety is overused, and just pretty condescending tone, doubtful tone, not the response that you would want when you finally reach out for help. Yeah. It wasn't what you would want to, if you begged your friend to go talk to somebody because they were really struggling, you would never want them to be met with this. It would be like inviting your friend to church for 5 years and finally getting them in the door and then
get condemned as soon as they walk in the door.
Yeah. Where you'd worked for so long to get them there. So anyways, I was really glad it was me because I was tough enough to recover from it. However, my body wasn't ready to recover because when the doctor came in, I went into just full-fledged anxiety attack there on the table. And I've never had an anxiety attack in front of anyone. And so the worse it would get, the more I would bully myself that you are not in front of Jay, you are in front of this doctor. And dear Lord in heaven, what are you doing right now? And that would make it worse. And so it was just a really difficult situation. And I think just what I took away from it was that I've been in that spot. The more I could chew on it and the more I could sleep on it, the more I could realize I was exactly where that nurse was. I didn't understand it. I judged people. I thought they were snowflakes. I thought they needed to suck it up. What did they need to be sad about? They're stay-at-home moms. They don't even have to work, you know, or they've got beautiful children or they're skinny or, you know, anything. You decide for people why they shouldn't be sad. There's nothing and there's this insensitivity and zero compassion because you haven't had to walk through that fire. And I just knew that I had to find some grace for her. Even though it really was pretty junky what happened, I really just had to have grace for her and for so many others because I've been there.
Right.
And until God stretched us and drenched us in the sucky stuff of life.
Right.
And making bad decisions and sitting in our sin, and until he seasoned us with all of that stuff to become the people that we are today, I would have probably said those same things.
Right.
If not to someone's face, about them.
Well, I mean, it just gets you to a point, you know, I guess the term open-minded, you know, is probably overused, but for me, it's spot on.
Mm-hmm.
It gets you to a different way of thinking. We've referenced that on here a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why we talk about grace, because we can see that now, you know, see it from the other side. I sat down with a friend this week, had a conversation with him, and he'd been through similar things that I had, and he basically was telling me about his divorce and how it changed him and how after it was over and he had, you know, kind of moved on, how he could look back and see, you know, where he'd messed up, how he could see that he had contempt for people and contempt for people that were getting divorced. And mm-hmm. now he said, all I can do is, you know, just feel for him. And he goes, I have zero contempt for him
right
now.
And judgment.
Yeah, and judgment. And, you know, just everything that he talked about, I could have turned and told him the exact
right.
same story,
right.
and, I mean, word for word.
Mm-hmm.
And so going through similar things, it just showed me that, you know, definitely you have to walk through it to be able to do that. And I guess, you know, if you know, for a person to have an open mind enough to, you know, to see that anxiety and know what you're going through, you know, they have to have dealt with it somewhere at some point. And he obviously hadn't. Yeah.
She. Yeah, and I get that. I really do. And it doesn't even sound like much of a occurrence, but at the time, I was just kind of drenched in it, drenched in not being able to get that full breath, drenched in the impossibility of figuring out what to do with this anxiety and how to get it off of my body. And for her to come in and say that it wasn't real and that I wasn't experiencing it, I have to tell you guys that a minute ago, I was trying to say A-S-K-S. It is the most difficult word for me to even attempt. And so it came out ASKUS, like A-S-K-U-S. In Southern Louisiana, we don't say that word. We say almost like A-X-E-S, like me. And so I was trying to say it a minute ago, and I told him, ASKUS. That was the only way I could get it out. Experiencing is another hard one.
Yeah.
I don't even know where I was going.
You're lost now.
Yeah. Do you remember?
I don't.
Okay. Well, that sucks.
Yes, it do. you were just talking about where the nurse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where she was at and talking to you.
Right. And it was just a junky situation.
Yeah. So you went to the doctor, obviously, for help, for somebody that, because she was a doctor, you felt like you could trust her opinion, her decision, her ideal or whatever. And, you know, that brings me to something we talk about a lot. Is people's opinion versus what they really know.
Right. I know Rachel Hollis put a really neat flow chart in her new book, Girl, Stop Apologizing. And I love the whole imagery of it, just being able to look at that chart. And
that's what you posted earlier in the week.
The gist of it was pretty much at any point when anyone is giving your opinion, just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And so people's opinions as a whole, and going to someone to help them help you to make a decision, those are two totally different things. We want to be really clear on that. And, you know, even though I was going to this doctor for help, whenever they showed me that they had not dealt with anxiety, then unfortunately, that puts them out of the running for helping me with this decision.
Right.
Does that make them a bad doctor? No.
Yeah.
Does that make them a bad person? No. Does that make them the person that's going to help me best with this decision for myself? It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And so there's no hard feelings. There's no judgment. There's nothing. It's just you have to have the wherewithal to know, where am I supposed to be looking for guidance? And God tells us that we are to be seeking wise counsel. And so where a lot of times we're making these decisions by how we feel, and we all know that feelings are not facts, we need to know that these decisions probably are needed to be brought before the Lord. They're needing to be brought before our spouse. They're needing to be brought before, you know, somebody that we admire, that we can look at their life and know that they've made good decisions and are capable of making good decisions.
Right.
Especially somebody that we know has walked through similar situations as us and has thrived.
Right.
And so I think that's who God puts in our lives. Just like I was telling you this week, I was able to talk with someone that was kind of staring down the gun barrel of divorce. And it was really amazing to be able to speak with her about what we had walked through. And I felt like I was really able to help her make a better decision for right now.
Right. Well, you had 100% compassion for her
right.
situation, for sure.
Right. Like, divorce is sin, or no, you are not able to get divorced, or judging her over wanting to get divorced. It was a, look, I know exactly how you feel. I felt the exact same way. I got divorced. We're going to figure out a way for you not to.
Yeah.
And that's really confusing for someone.
Yeah.
You're like, you don't love your husband? That's not what I said. I didn't say I don't love my husband. We're going to talk about the things that Jay and I deal with on a daily basis, and we're going to deal with things that we could have used that we know now
yeah.
and applied it to back then. And even though we couldn't be saved, we're going to save you.
Yeah.
And then if down the line you still decide to pull the trigger, I'm going to be there too.
Not condemned for it and
no.
doing your best to help it. Because it is easy, or not easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the rose-colored glasses come off and you can look back and know where you really messed up and did things wrong and things that if you had just opened your eyes and been open-minded about it, that it would have been a lot easier to function and, you know, and help for sure.
Well, I don't know if you had any along the way, but I sure did have friends that were very harsh with me during the divorce. And I got as far away from them as I possibly could because the truth hurt and I didn't want to deal with the things that they were saying because I knew that they were right. And it didn't go along with my intentions for what, you know, I wanted. And so I got away from them. I didn't want to hear what they had to say. And those are the people that I respect the most today. I very much respect my friends that kind of ran towards the fire and didn't care. The fire meaning the depression and the divorce and everything that was happening within it. I really do appreciate them and the compassion they had. But I also really do appreciate my friends that were really tough with me. And unfortunately, I did lose them for a couple of years because I pushed them away.
Right.
Because they were trying to use tough love with me. But after time heals that and the smoke settles, they are who I really will tell God thank you for when I get there. Because they really did try to pour into my life in the most real and pure way, you know, even though it didn't feel really good at the time.
Right. Well, at this stage in our life, where we're at now, to me, out of all the things that we talk about with each other, with other people, talking about divorce is the hardest thing to talk about to anybody.
Yeah.
because, you know, they're asking you for help. They're asking you what you think. You don't want them to get divorced. You want to help. But here you are sitting there saying all this.
Yeah.
And you're a divorced person. I mean, it's one of the hardest topics to talk about, you know, with anybody.
Yeah.
And I know from what you told me, what little bit you told me about that conversation with her, you know, that's what you said. You know, I'm sitting here telling her that she doesn't need to get a divorce. And I'm divorced, and I think she even mentioned, you know, she looks at other people and looks like, you know, their life's better. Mm-hmm. Grass is always greener.
Right.
And you want to tell them, you know, hey, maybe that's not true, but here, right, here you are, you and I sitting here looking at each other.
Yes.
You know, and it's just, it's very hard to do.
Right. I do believe we are the exception to the rule. And I do believe that we have had to work our tails off to get even to this 2-year mark. And so it is confusing, yes. But what I did want to say a minute ago, too, is when I was wanting to get divorced, I only wanted to speak to my divorce friends. It's just something we do. We don't want to hear the opinions of those that have not had any rocky, you know.
And only the divorced friends that had good opinions.
Yes, right. And so with us, it's almost like, surprise, we don't, yeah, we are divorced, but we don't believe in divorce, and we really want your family to stay together, and we're going to do everything we can to help you do that.
Yeah, to, you know, something that we've talked about that happens a lot, not only with a podcast, but with our life and finding stuff out, it's just like, you know, the message our pastor today, you know, being basically on decisions,
yeah,
and who to go to the decision, like you said earlier, you know, taking it to your best friend or taking it to your spouse or taking it to the Lord or whatever to do that. And when I listen to that today, it, you know, in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, as a confident person, you know, I don't need to take that anywhere. And I, you know, I've done that a lot through my life.
Yeah.
I think, well, a less confident person or somebody that, you know, just not real strong, that's who needs to be going there. And then I sit there and think about that today during the sermon that, you know, I think I've probably got that backwards.
I
think probably, you know, the person with the most confidence, you know, maybe you're too confident. You're charging ahead and you're not thinking about anything but yourself being right. And, you know, taking it to the Lord or me giving it to you and saying, what do you think? You know, that's something for me that's hard and something that, you know, I've definitely had to learn over the last few years for sure.
I think that is exactly right. I was thinking about that earlier. It's just, you think, you know, we kind of label from the media and looking at the world as we know it and what's in our faces all the time. And we've got it backwards, that people that reach out for help are wussies, and people that are strong and confident and know what they want, that's courage. And we've got it flip-flopped for sure.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about, you know, kind of asking the Lord for guidance, even in the smaller things in our life, and just kind of running things by Him throughout the day, and how helpful that can be for our lives. And a neat little picture I was shown is Liza. She's 10, and she was getting in the fridge to get, I think we're out in the party barn, so she was outside. It was late at night. We were watching a movie, and she got a drink, and she went to get a drink, and she stopped with the door open, and she poked her head out, and she goes, "Hey, Mom, can I get a drink?" And I almost was like, Liza, you're 10. Like, why are you asking for a drink? Because she's old enough to go to the fridge, grab a drink, and go on her way. She's fine. But it occurred to me that it was like 9 o'clock at night. And so if she'd have gotten that Gatorade, she wouldn't have gone to sleep for a long time. So I told her, I said, "Thanks for asking me. I know you don't have to." And I said, "You're fine to get it, but if you do, you're not going to go to sleep. So I bet you would probably want water, but it's just up to you." And she was like, "Oh, yeah." And she grabbed a water and ran on. And that was just such a neat picture to me. You know, she could have made the decision on her own. She's old enough to make it. We're all adults. We're all old enough to make our own decisions. But the wisdom that can come from running it by somebody else. Right. And I don't even mean a small Facebook group. I mean,
it's not a poll you're looking for yet.
No, it's not a poll. It's a, I'm talking 3-4 people tops. This is just, these are your people that you have that you can go to for these decisions. And, you know, even Jay finding a truck, he knows how to find a truck, and he knows he's got his own money and he can go and he can buy that truck and everything is fine. Nobody would think different. But for you, babe, to run it by somebody that knows what you're talking about and knows what you've been through with the other trucks, it would just really be helpful. And if you didn't look at it as asking someone's permission, you're not asking your spouse's permission. You're communicating with your spouse because the two of you are stronger than the one of you. Like I was saying earlier, if you have found yourself to be making really crappy decisions, why don't you sit and take a little rest for a while and ask somebody for help so that we can start making some smarter ones?
Well, and I think from personal experience that if you really think about that, if you're making those decisions, you've probably pretty well locked out everybody else from even having any kind of say in what you're doing, for sure.
Yeah, this is our new society we live in. We kind of walk on eggshells. We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Yeah. Everyone is really sensitive. But, you know, something that can help with that is asking. There's so many times during the week that Jay calls here and I say hello and he'll say, "What do you think?" That's his first sentence. And I know that we're going to talk about the farm. And I probably don't even know what he's talking about. But for him to just hear himself say it, for the two of us to talk about a few of the facets of it that I do know, it's just that much more helpful.
I know for me, you know, that's something that we do, and it's not a perfect habit for me for sure, because sometimes I do stuff, just do it and go on. But it's something that you and I do together that you've helped me to do that. But I see where it's helped me in a lot of, with other people, not necessarily just you and I.
Right.
Just from what you and I have done.
Right. I know we've brought our podcast to the Lord and we brought our family to the Lord, but on a lot of decisions, we'll talk to each other about it, but we won't say, "Let's pray about it." And that's something we should be doing a lot more.
Well, for sure. And, you know, too, it's not always you having the answer to give to somebody, whether it's somebody talking to me or somebody talking to you and I talking to each other. It's not necessarily that you have the right answer. It's not necessarily that you have all the answers. It's that, you know, maybe you started on down a path to make a decision, and it's like you were talking about with Lily at school.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I mean, that's a prime example of that.
Yeah, she was in a group of friends that her daddy and I just didn't really approve of. We knew better than to say, "You can't be friends with
forbid
them."
Forbid it, yeah.
We knew it wouldn't work. And so we gave her some space, but we revealed to her our feelings on it. We were very transparent with her that they don't act like you. You're not acting like yourself around them. We just don't feel like this is what God has for you as far as friendships. And so it took her several months, but she finally pulled away from them and chose a couple of other friends to try and invest in. And what was so funny to me is she was so disappointed that those friends that she left, she was so disappointed that they weren't proud of her for finding the maturity, to find the maturity.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Lily, no one is going to be like, 'Oh, you did so good to leave me in the dust. Way to go, way to grow beyond me.'" And so we have all of these reasons that we don't move forward or we don't move on. You know, what will they think? What will they think if we leave them? And she even took it a step further and thought that they would kind of send her an encouraging note, like, "Look at you grow. Look at you grow, girl." I thought that was really cute.
Well, and that just makes me think of going back, you know, to opinions.
Yeah.
And, you know, my granddaddy would have had a, you know, very colorful saying to go with that. But I say that.
What is it?
Oh, everybody knows that opinions are
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Everyone has one.
Yeah, everyone has one. But, I mean, you know, it makes me think about that, you know, just like that. I mean, somebody giving you an opinion, and you could tell them you have, you know, a disease, and you're very sick, and they wouldn't even remember it the next week.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have your best interest in mind. It's just, mm-mm. they just want to give you an opinion mm-hmm. about it because it makes them feel better. And yes. so, you know, I think being open-minded enough to sit down and listen to somebody and truly hear what yeah. they're saying and not just throw something out there because it makes you feel good or because it was yeah. something neat to say and made you feel better or whatever. And you know, that makes me think about something you always say about bullying people
yeah.
on their feelings. I mean, you mm-hmm. talk about that a lot. And I had never, you know, you had last week we talked about that unselfish discipline with yeah. kids. And this is kind of the same thing yeah. for me, bullying people on their feelings, how yeah. you want to push them away. It's just something I'd really never thought about in that way.
Right. Well, it came to really the forefront of my mind when, after I walked through the separation and divorce and then having two homes with the kids, whenever the kids would be sad or miss their dad or miss all of us being together, I would make them stop because it made me so uncomfortable and so sad. And I couldn't rock along and pretend like things were good if they were constant reminders that it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And so I would just try to bully them out of those emotions to where they would get back to happy. And then we could go back to pretending like everything's okay. And so that's when that really was such a huge picture for me. But really, the way that we treat each other is not about each other. It's about how we're feeling inside. And so where when we're trying to bully each other into acting the way that makes us feel better about the situation, you know, that is just, that needs to really be kept in check. And it takes a lot, it takes like a super amount of compassion to be able to really look at that person instead of inward. And so now the approach I take is, girl, get it out. Cry hard and cry harder. And let's get all of these emotions out. And so for all of the years that I bullied my children because when they were sad, it made me feel like a bad mother or a bad parent or a bad person, now I want to catch up on all of that lost time and allow them to feel exactly what they're feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm being honest, that morning that I was sitting in the doctor's office and that lady was telling me that I wasn't feeling anxiety, I don't know, even now that I'm talking, what was I? What am I feeling if I'm not feeling anxiety? It's so funny to me.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just supposed to snap out of it, huh? That's what I tell my children. That's what I had just had. My kids had gone to spend the day with your parents, and my little girl had acted out. And she wears it on her face. So if she's upset, everyone in the whole McDonald's knows.
Yeah, she's dead-eyed.
So I took her to the bathroom, and I was very stern. And she just kept saying, I can't help it, I can't help it. And I kept saying, yes, you can. You need to choose. You need to choose a different emotion. And I'm so embarrassed even saying this right now.
Yeah, but that is a fine line.
It is. But I thought it was humorous that I left there, went and sat in a doctor's office and had a nurse come in and regurgitate what I had said to my very impressionable little girl to me.
Yeah.
And I think it was all wrapped up in one big burrito. You know, I was, while it was happening to me, I was realizing how hurtful it was. And I was realizing that I had just did it to Liza. So it was all of the, it was so much emotion wrapped up into one. I'm sure the doctor was like, what in the actual fresh hell is happening on my table? But it really was just kind of the perfect storm that sometimes we all can experience.
Sure.
And so I was able to leave that doctor's office. And as I found my feet after all of that, call my little girl at your parents and just tell her how everything I said to her was bull. It just, it was junk, and I'm sorry, and the way she was acting was making me feel bad, and I should have just dealt with it instead of told her the things that I told her, because sometimes we can't choose our emotions. Sometimes that's how we're feeling, and that's how we're feeling. That's as simple as it is, you know? And so it was able, I was able to, you know, use it as a teaching moment for her.
Right.
So, but it's kind of funny, huh?
Well, it is, and it's hard to decipher sometimes, you know, between a pity party,
yeah,
and an actual,
right,
you know, an actual issue or a problem. And,
right,
you know, I don't, I have a huge amount of compassion. I think I was a compassionate person before we went through all this, and I think I'm a whole lot more compassionate person now. But on the same side of that, you know, there's a certain point there where it's a pity party, or
yeah,
where, you know, you just,
right,
gotta call it like you see it. And I want people to think that we don't do that, because, I mean, you'll call a spade quicker than anybody.
Yeah.
And whether you want to hear it or not.
Right.
And so, but all that being said, I mean, when you're talking about that, or somebody's really coming to you with something heartfelt, or, you know, you got a kid that's actually struggling, you know, having that compassion and being open-minded to do it, and, you know, that's huge. And being able to, you know, to say that yourself, that, you know, I failed, and, you know, I learned from that failure, and you're fixing to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that I screwed up. I don't want you to. I mean,
yeah,
sometimes that stuff's hard to admit to.
Well, and I wanted to call the nurse back in and talk to her about it.
Yeah.
Like, look.
Try to convince her.
Look, man. I know right where you are. I was right there. And if you're going to be in this profession, you're going to have to find some sensitivity and some compassion, because some of us have been spending a long time not reaching out for help. And when we do, we can't be met with this junk. We
right.
can't. And since I couldn't, that's not appropriate, I could pour it into my child and say, we can't bully each other out of our emotions and our feelings. And sometimes this is how we feel, and we just have to feel it and get over it, you
yeah.
know? But we're not allowed to bully each other out of it.
No suck it up buttercup on that one.
Well, but a lot of times, yes.
Yes.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah. And that's what I was getting at a while ago.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
that's a fine line. I mean,
okay.
But you have to, you know, you got to put a little mental toughness in there, too.
Well, going back, I forgot our bag going to your parents.
Oh, yeah.
So when we get to your parents, I have forgotten her swimsuit. She was wearing some bike shorts and a sports bra. So I said, under her shirt. And so I said, do you mind if you just wear your sports bra and your shorts? And she got upset and said she didn't want to. And I said, well, let me go run to Walmart. So I leave her and the others with your mom and dad, and I run to Walmart. I get the very last swimsuit that's her size, and I love it. It's pretty. It's orange. I get back, and her face falls into her feet. She hates it. And she says, can I wear my sports bra and shorts? You know, the very ones she said she wouldn't. And so it really upset me that I missed breakfast with your parents to go do that, you know,
yeah.
and she couldn't. She's 10, but she couldn't find a way to be appreciative. You know, just tell mom thanks for the bathing
right.
suit. And when you're with grandma and mom's nowhere around, wear your sports bra,
yeah.
you know. So I do understand where that situation is a suck it up buttercup
right.
and my situation where I'm a full grown adult with many coping mechanisms that can't get a full breath for 12 days. That's not a suck it
yeah.
up buttercup. That's a we need to get to the bottom
right.
of this. So,
right.
so I know what you're talking about.
Well, and another funny side note to that story at mom's. I don't know if you...
Oh, don't piss me off right now. This is what he does, you guys. We'll be talking about something and just like this, and he'll go, oh, I forgot to tell you.
Another funny part of that story
oh,
is this little boy's there. And he goes swimming in the clothes he has on.
No.
And they go back. The bag's not
no.
there. They go back to the house, and he's wet, and he's cold. And so Grandma says, well, can you keep your underwear on? I'll dry your clothes.
He doesn't have any.
He pulls his shorts down. I'm like, whoop, no
underwear. Doesn't have underwear on.
So she said they had a little bit of a touchy situation getting that towel around him. And she said he stood in one spot standing beside her for 40 minutes while his clothes dried.
For real?
Yeah. She got a sure kick out of it. Pretty funny.
You had forgotten to tell me that.
Yeah, I did. I'd forgotten
That's
to tell you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so he had a naked boil with her for a while.
So, that is so funny.
Maybe you got anything you would like to ask us?
Babe, ask us. I don't.
What else you got to what I'm trying to say?
I don't have anything else. That's I'm it. Ready to go have some fun.
You are?
This is what we're about to do. We're going to the movies. We're going to go eat dinner. We're going to go buy a TV for our loft. We're going to make a brace behind that wall to hang the TV. We're going to go check corn. We're going to get a cooler of...
My money's on that we never even leave this house,
Michelob,
but go ahead.
Ultra. And white bread sandwiches, mayonnaise, love mayonnaise on certain nights.
Oh, Lord.
What else are we doing? Rent a movie.
Just going to go to the movie and go eat. I
go
think
on
be
a
the
long
extent
hike.
Of it. Yeah.
I have all these things that I want to do throughout the week, and I get to do them on Sunday, so we're about to pack them in. You ready?
Yeah, I just got to be rested up enough to go to work tomorrow.
Okay.
What else you got, Ben?
That's it.
All right, well, the song says, the road goes on forever and the party never ends.
I love you.
I love you, too.
We sure appreciate y'all listening today. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can search for us, Moving On Podcast, that's three words, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We would love to hear from you. With ways you're figuring out how to drop the ropes in each of your own lives, and even ways that you're not, hell, that's just as entertaining to us. See you in a couple of weeks.